So a new year, a new calendar year, 2014. How did this happen so quickly?
Yeah, and we too quickly. But too quickly. Life goes
in this way.
In know? This way, you it's know? Incredible. I remember that when I was a young boy, 1 year was like 10 years.
Right. Right.
Because to go to school every morning, to work, to do the. And it was extremely long. And then years after years, you had the impression that the time was going faster and faster.
Like in the old films with the page of the calendar is flying off the wall. Yeah,
yeah, it's a pity because when you become a little bit more, I don't mean intelligent, but wise, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. you could do things in a better way, then there is no time.
Well, fortunately, though, there at least is some time, even if in a relative way it's moving more quickly. But it's our first chance to talk with Ricardo Muti in this new calendar year. And since we last saw him, you've had Hernani
in Roma.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a little stirring of the pot again in Rome about who's paying for the opera, and is it the government, is it
the
city?
Yeah, but this is not only
but
Roma.
Now it's not...
No, it's not fixed yet. We have a new intendant, but the situation of the theaters in Italy is very difficult.
Right.
But this has been always during my life, every year. But now it's more critical due to the economical crisis.
Right.
And... in fact, I just this morning heard that the orchestra will be on strike for the first two performances, Olanfaune and Sortilège, that Dutoit is preparing. And so I'm very sorry about that, but they didn't receive the salary in this month, so it's very hard to find the colors in Ravel,
right,
when you don't have what to eat. The Latin, the Roman said, "Primum vivere deinde philosophari."
Right.
First, you have to live, right. And then you can think about all the philosophy and the psychology, all the other science. But first, the stomach, no?
But I think it's still also a bit different in translation, not those words, but the activity. Because I remember as a student in Europe, you would see in the newspaper, this gallery will be closed at the Louvre today because of strike. Mm. But, I mean, the strikes were scheduled. So the first two performances, there will be a strike.
Okay.
But not the third.
No.
Okay, so here it's either strike or no strike. It's not scheduled.
It's sort of compromise.
right. No, it sounds like...
It's a sort of Mediterranean attitude.
Well, maybe, yeah.
But this is the same thing in San Carlo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a problem. The theater that has other problems, but economically succeeds in a way is La Scala, because in Milano there are all these banks,
right?
And then they, if they have a deficit, the banks help.
And they provide a private
provide, etc. But in the south, you don't have the same situation.
Right.
But in any case, the idea of Italy with the theaters closed. It's impossible.
Right.
You know, that is right. Impossible. In a way or another, they have to find a solution. I've seen this morning also, for example, that the New York Metropolitan Opera is having problem with the public, that is the tickets
right.
less and less and less.
Right.
So I don't know if it's people are interested in many other things that can be consumed in without thinking a short time, mm-hmm. and or there are other problems. It's too early to say. Certainly, we are in a society where values are disappearing, and the young boys, the new generation, they spend the time in front of an iPad or watching television. There is no communication, no interest. There is a sort of solitude, you know, loneliness. This is will be a problem in the future. I remember when I was a boy, we are five brothers. We were all around the table. There was no television at that time. And we spoke with the father, with the mother, and about problems, this and that. So we had a dialogue. Today, in the same table, you see that everybody is watching television, eating spaghetti or something else.
Well, they have something in their hand. They're sending some message or looking at a picture.
When we were kids, if we were in love with another person, we tried, you know, for months to have a smile, to look in the eyes, etc., etc. And it was so long the way to arrive to not something concrete, but I mean, just to have a smile.
Right.
Today, we did this SMS. Io ti amo. it's even too long. It's just T-A-T.
Right.
Ti amo, T-A.
That's all the time I have. See you at six.
Even deep relationships, they are broken with an SMS. It's a strange society.
But so it's universal. It's around the world. It's
around
not
the
limited
world.
To
so
one
that's
country.
The reason why maybe to go to an opera, to a concert, and to stay there and to prepare, to know about the program, to study, to, because music is not just enjoyment, it's culture. And culture is also means a work of the brain.
And that's true whether one is working with works from centuries ago or if one is creating a new work. Either way, you need this focus.
I hope, for example, in music, the fact that the composers around the world, they write a lot of music, and even when we find that the piece is interesting, after the performance we forget, no? And the next day we don't remember anything. It's not that we have to remember a melody because the melody is finished. if you write a melody, immediately the critics or the public will say, we know already, this is a déjà vu, we have seen or we have heard. So I believe that the future will be very much in this process of many cultures that are getting together. So the fact that we have a multi-ethnic society, everyone is bringing his own culture, no? So we have a culture from the East, from the South America, from Australia, from the and with the, I think that the meeting of all these different ideas and cultures and the scales, musical scales, intervals, songs, motives, rhythms, will create a new way of new music, no? Because in a way we are stuck down, no? Siamo fermi. We are we do contemporary music because it's important. We have to go ahead. But really, in the last 50 years, what remains in the mind or in the impression of people? At the time of Mozart, when he wrote La ci darem la mano, 2 days later, the people in the street were singing La ci darem la mano. Mozart was writing for his... For the people, that was a direct message. With Beethoven already, piano piano, little by little, the distance between composer and public was becoming more and more problematic. And Schumann, Robert Schumann, said at the time of when I, at the time of Mozart, the composer, he said that the composer was like a shoemaker, no? Made the shoes that everybody could wear. Mm-hmm. And Schumann said that this, that today the composer writes, makes shoes that only he can wear. And we are talking about Schumann. Can you imagine today?
Right, right. At the same time, though, there are composers who are listening as well as writing and try to be a part of their society, try to find a way out, whether they can succeed. You have a composer working with the orchestra this week who's also playing cello, I guess.
So Solima.
With one hand he's writing and with one hand he's bowing.
Yeah, he's a wonderful musician. I have conducted his music in La Scala, in Salzburg, in Ravenna. He's a really very interesting musician, very cultivated. In fact, this piece that he will perform together with Yo-Yo Ma is a piece that is the result of his studies in the culture of the south south of Italy, you know, the rhythms, melodies that go back in the 16th century, in 17th century. Until today, the tarantola, no?
Right.
Because the tarantella, generally we think that is something something happy, something that must, you know, the sort of Neapolitan dance, etc. But the origin of tarantella is very tragic, it's very dramatic, because the tarantula is the animal that if bites you, you die.
Right.
Because it's a very poison. So in this piece that is very, very difficult for the two celli and also for the conductor, for the orchestra. I mean, it's very, very complicated, but it brings memories of and echoes of even from the Balkans, from the Middle East, and the Mediterranean. So that is a way of writing music that can be also can give you the feeling of the past of and that music that tells you who you are, from where you come, no? As I said one time, we all come from the Mediterranean. I remember that when I was in Philadelphia music director. No, before that, I was a guest conductor, and at the end of one of my first concerts with the orchestra, a cellist of the orchestra that became a great friend of mine, his name was Harry Goredetzer from Russia, was a huge man. And after the concert, he came to see me in my room. And he came in and with his voice like a basso profondo. He said, oh, maestro, you are very good. You are very good. Then little silence. And then he said, are you sure that you are not Jewish? And I said, you know, I don't know, but we all come from that area.
Right.
And so in the music of Solima, because he's Sicilian,
yes,
there is all this flavor and this culture that in the music of today can come back and tell us a lot of things.
It's very interesting, isn't it? Here's a young composer, performer, and to create something new, he's not only looking at past things, but looking at ways that these past rhythms, sounds, etc., might resonate with us. And you have the following week a new piece,
Morricone,
new to us, by Morricone, who most people know as a film composer. But when he's writing for film, just as when your teacher Nino Rota was writing for film, very often he's using film and the music in film to take your mind back. Even though he's writing new music. My mother and I went to see on the big screen in the big theater a month or so ago, Il Gatto Pardo, mm-hmm. and you played the dance yeah. music.
So you did recognize the music?
Of course, of course. But to see it in this movie, the whole movie is about eyes in the back of the head, right? Mm. It's Sicily coming down in the 19th century, looking back.
Si.
And this music, which is invented music, but it's invented coming out of themes and knowing that in a film, music will be repeated at times. He puts a cell there and then it comes back. And it's a power of music to open us, but also sometimes to take us backwards, isn't it? To be introspective.
And I did conducted the premiere of this piece in Ravenna. And when you hear this music, I mean,
Morricone. We're talking about now.
First thing is that Morricone was a pupil of Goffredo Petrassi.
Mm-hmm.
So Petrassi was one of the most important composers of the 20th century in Italy. Petrassi, together with Casella,
mm-hmm.
Ghedini, Malipiero. So it's an important school
right.
of great musicians. In fact, Giulini, often he conducted music of Petrassi,
right.
Partita, etc., etc. And so Morricone studied composition with Petrassi. But when he writes music not for film, you don't have any idea that is the same composer.
So he writes in a different style, in a different way.
Completely.
Yeah.
In Rota was different.
Yeah.
Rota, his music, even when he wrote operas like Il Cappello di Paglia di Firenze, that mm-hmm. is a jewel, you could feel that was Rota in the music for movie and the series, and the music out of the movies. But Morricone is completely different. In fact, this piece, nobody would think that is Morricone that wrote music for Il Padrino or the Westerns, etc., etc., that have made him famous.
Right.
This piece of music, it's very deep, very effective, and is against the racism,
yes,
against the terrorism, and was written after the disaster, the tragedy of the Twin Towers.
Mm-hmm.
And the text is an English text that mm-hmm. we did when I did Ravenna was in Italian. Mm-hmm. Now will be in the original, and it's very moving because I am black, you are white, but we feel the same, mm-hmm. the same way. And there is this chorus that speaks about the arcobaleno, the rainbow, that is mm-hmm. a sign of we all would like to have a rainbow in our life, no?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the piece is very moving, and I'm glad that he is coming here,
yes.
Morricone. It will be a contribution to the to understand that is not only the musician for he had this Grammy mm-hmm. Grammy the Oscar no for
no
the,
just now I think he got
another
a kind
one.
Of lifetime
si.
Grammy
si.
Yeah.
Governor's
Award or something.
See,
yeah.
see. And he had also the Oscar for the two, I think,
yes.
or three for his music. But this is a sign that you become famous writing for what today is the most popular form of
right,
art,
right.
in quotes.
Right.
And you can write the most important and interesting thing for the concert halls and...
nobody will know.
nobody will know, and you don't even make money for
yeah.
that.
Yeah, but then maybe that allows him to truly express himself because, of course, he's not doing it for fame or money at this
no,
point.
No, of course.
He's doing it because he wants
si,
this.
Si, si. But sometimes, you know, it's like Mascagni.
Yes.
When Mascagni wrote, when he was very young, Cavaliere Rusticana, then he after wrote many other operas. But everybody, when met Mascagni, said, oh, you wrote Cavaliere Rusticana. And he became angry because he wanted to be reminded for L'Amico Frizzo or
right.
for Nerone or for other operas. The same, Morricone wants to be recognized as a serious composer, mm-hmm. not only for the music that he has written for the movies.
Thank you.
Another thing that these examples point to is that sometimes, even in this, quote, neutral field of classical music, that is, notes on a paper, the notes themselves, they're not German, they're not African, they're not Italian. The composers, particularly if they're from Europe, often had influence of many cultures. Vienna, it was a crossroads. It still is a crossroads. And yet, Schubert, particularly the lesser played symphonies, it seems that the rest of the world sometimes needs the Italians to open the door. I was looking, you're playing the third and fourth symphonies, and the last time the third was played, it was a guy named Riccardo Muti. Mm-hmm. The last time the fourth was played, it was a guy named Claudio Abbado in mm-hmm. Chicago. The recording with this orchestra of the fourth is by Carlo Maria Giulini. So these are the famous Viennese Schubert conductors. But I mean, seriously, they are three great Schubert conductors, but you're all Italian.
The Schubert was very much influenced by the Italian music. Salieri, for example, had a great influence on Schubert, and he was very much impressed by the operas, especially Rossini. In fact, even Beethoven was angry about the fact that Rossini was more popular than Beethoven in Vienna. But he had this great love for Italy. In fact, the following concert, I do the overture in the Italian
style.
And Schubert is a composer. I decided to do the entire cycle, and to have also around the cycle the choral music, leader, etc., chamber music. First, because Schubert is extremely important to refine an orchestra. It's not that the Chicago Symphony needs to be refined, but generally the orchestras know how, except the Vienna Philharmonic, they know how to play Brahms. Mm-hmm. They know more or less how to play Beethoven, even if today is a big confusion. Philological and non-philological, it's this and that, etc. There is such a confusion that even critics like you, I'm not saying that you did, but maybe, if you have an orchestra that is a little has 14 violins, immediately you hear, oh, there's too big the orchestra for that. But people forget that the Haydn, when he wrote The Creation, the Schöpfung, the second performance or the third performance was conducted by Salieri with 1,000 performers between chorus and orchestra. And when Mozart one time was in Germany, wrote to his father saying that he was so impressed by the performance of his symphony, I don't remember which one, but in this orchestra were 8 bassoons. Can you imagine? So it's not the number of people, it's the style that counts. So how to play Schubert today remains, in a way, a mystery.
Yes.
Fortunately, we have little by little understood that Brahms comes also from Schubert. So the is a lead, no? Mm-hmm. And many times in the tradition, Brahms was played thick, fat, saying that this was because German. But German doesn't mean Wurstel all the time. There is a refinement. Right. There is a great culture.
Right.
And Brahms certainly...
And Brahms moved south, and where did he vacation? Italy. So where did he write?
So Schubert represented the soul of Vienna. In fact, when I did the first time the Vienna symphony of Schubert, the Vienna Philharmonic, they asked me to record the entire cycle, mm-hmm. and after the cycle they invited me to conduct the New Year's concert, mm-hmm. because they said Schubert is the door to Johann Strauss, mm-hmm. and company. Mm-hmm. certo, at that time, even at the time of Mozart, was difficult to understand or to like or dislike these composers. For mm-hmm. example, just today I was reading the Corriere della Sera, a review of the Clemenza di Tito in Italy, and I was reminded reading the piece that when Mozart wrote La Clemenza di Tito, and that after had success in Prague, because Mozart was very much loved in Czechoslovakia, in Bohemia, but not so much in Austria. When the opera was performed in Vienna, the wife of the Leopold II Zweiter, the Imperatrice, at that time they used to speak Italian, no, mm-hmm. because it was with the opera was the common language of Italian.
Right.
The comment of the wife of the emperor was in Italian, una porcheria tedesca.
Oh,
mamma mia! That means una porcheria. It's a Schweinerei. You know?
German pork delicatessen or something.
No, delicatessen. No, I mean, it was in a negative.
Sense. I mean, pig pen.
Si.
Pig pen.
German pig pen.
And
that was the comment to Mozart.
Right.
Now, the Schubert, his music reflected the soul of Vienna, but he was, in a way, very not lucky, not fortunate, because many of his symphonies were performed after his death.
Mm-hmm.
And but the entire cycle of symphonies gives the exact image of this great, really great composer that speaks about not only about Vienna, about Austria, about the center of Europe, but has this melancholy,
mm-hmm.
no? Of already is without knowing, because he was not a politician, he was not interested in politics like Beethoven, that
was
very much open to the social problems. This, Schubert was an innocent,
mm-hmm.
But in a way, his music speaks to us, especially today, more than before, because it gives us a certain comfort with this, si dice comfort, with these melodies and with this incredible sense of harmony that mm-hmm. is so Schubert. So,
and if the audience and the orchestra, or the orchestra and the audience, sees how this developed over time, even if in the end maybe they'll still prefer the great symphony or the unfinished symphony, they'll understand where it's coming from, and they'll also hear these pieces with the proper delicacy. Sounds like you're wearing gloves, but with the proper lightness,
si.
I guess.
Leggerezza,
leggerezza
is the word that I'm using with the orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that is without bones,
right.
Actually, because in many times he tries to be the little Beethoven, no?
Right.
But c'è una leggerezza, un candore, it's a purity,
mm-hmm.
innocence.
Mm-hmm. You're also going to play one of the masses,
sì, and, la bemolle,
and, di and it's never been played by this orchestra.
Really?
I think that's right. Mm.
So. I did many times the several masses of Schubert with the Vienna Philharmonic. The A flat, I even performed with the Vienna Philharmonic in Dresden and in Leipzig many
mm-hmm.
years ago. Then I did the E flat, that is the most
right.
With the A flat at the two big mess.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did the G major, that is a masterpiece. This is a small symphony mess, but it's really a dialogue between composer and God, and the B flat. One thing is interesting about the mess of Schubert is that in the Credo, He never put music, he never used the phrase credo in unam catholicam, right, apostolicam ecclesiam.
Right.
So I don't know, and nobody understands why. I don't think that was just because he didn't believe in the Catholic Church or in the Catholic religion, etc. But certainly it's strange the fact that in every mass he didn't put music under these words.
I mean, maybe it was not a protest, but a way for him to personally engage with a form that didn't mean something to him in the religious sense, because nobody's even coming to him in most of these cases. He's not getting commissioned to write these. Sometimes they're suggested, but it's not like he's working for a pope or a bishop or
something. Because
he doesn't have a belief.
But because in the liturgy of the Catholic religion, in the credo, there is credo in unam,
right, of course,
catholicam, yeah, apostolicam. Right. He always took away.
But credo means I believe, right?
See.
So maybe he couldn't put it after those words. He believed in the rose petals. Right?
And this is a surprise for me. I didn't know that the A flat mass. I did very recently, the Bayerische Rundfunk, this work. And one thing is clear, he didn't write this mass or the E-flat, as you were saying before, to please a cardinal or a bishop, etc., and not for liturgic reasons. Mm-hmm. But he wrote to express his feelings through the words of the Latin text. Mm-hmm. So he didn't want to say, I am Catholic, I am Christian, I'm
right.
Jewish, or
right.
this. No. When I say credo, that is my expression,
yeah.
Credo, in a sort of general, superior way, not
right.
Credo in something very specific.
Right. Yeah. Mm. But you have to, if you are working in this Western tradition, if you are working in the European tradition, even up until today, you have to at least confront the fact that church music is so much a part of the development of music,
and is what I
the
said
Latin
to,
language is.
Yeah, is what I said to the Pope few months ago.
The new Pope,
the new Francesco,
will come to him. Yeah,
Francesco, because when he made the official first visit to the President of Italy,
yes,
in the Quirinale. Then I, together with four or five people, because we're 500, 600 people there, he made a speech, the president made a speech, but the president after wanted five people of culture, mm-hmm, of science to meet privately,
right,
the Pope. And I was one of the five. And when everybody said the phrase to the Pope, and when he came, I was my turn, I said, Santità, because we call the Pope Santità, holiness, no?
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget how much the church did for music in the centuries. And so... He didn't
what
make
did
it,
he say?
He didn't make any no comment.
Well,
he
prefers music. Because he did give an interview, this book, where he goes through his records and he says, oh, the Furtwängler 1961 in Bayreuth, this is much better than the... So, I mean, he has a sense of music, but
maybe
he was waiting to get to know you better. But.
I have conducted for three different popes and for John Paul II several times.
Yes.
But one of the most impressive concert that had experiences was the concert that I did for Ratzinger.
Benedict. Before he was Benedict.
Just a few months before he retired.
And all right, before he retired, when he was still Pope. Yeah.
Still Pope. And so in the Sala Nervi with 7,000 people there. And I did the Vivaldi and Verdi. And after the, it was the day when he gave me the honor, no, as a, the one of the highest honors that the church can give. And he made the, after the performance, he stood up and he made a sort of musicological speech that was very, very, very interesting and deep. It was clear that he was improvising. There was not, so that was a big lesson for many musicologists or critics or musicians that were in the hall. That was very, very, very interesting. But until now, there is no, has not been any concert for the with this Pope in the famous.
Well, he's been pretty busy, but
yes, also Ratzinger was busy because behind the, I mean, he went through and also this Pope through a very difficult moment for the church, and if you think that. With all these immigrants that are coming, for example, that in some of the schools in the north of Italy, more than the children, more the name Riccardo or Francesco are less than Mohammed, and so it's a problem for the Catholic Church until we don't arrive to. Understanding of the different religions until we don't realize that there is one creator. I don't say God, one creator. You can call in a different way, but this problem of the religions and is a really a tragedy in the Catholic Church. And then I think that that's the reason why Benedict couldn't. He felt that he couldn't
carry all of this on his shoulders.
Thank you, carry. And so, at least, but we have the experience for us Italians to have in the Vatican two popes is something that
it's quite different.
It's can you imagine?
But you got an Italian pope back by way of Argentina, though.
His family, his family comes from Piemonte, near Torino. It's Italo-Argentina, but two popes, can you imagine in the 50s or 60s or 70s?
No.
Nobody would even think for a moment.
You have to go back to Avignon.
The Papa e l'Antipapa.
Thank you.
The Credo from Schubert's A-flat major Mass, known as number 5, D-678, never performed in his lifetime, and in fact, never performed until this coming week by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, when Riccardo Muti brings it to you with the CSO, along with the overture in the Italian style and the U.S. premiere of Enrico Morricone's Voices from a Silence, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at Orchestra Hall. We heard the recording from 1980 or so, Wolfgang Sawallisch leading the Bavarian Radio Symphony Orchestra and Chorus on EMI, then later remastered and re-released. Earlier on in the program, we heard this past week's composer and soloist, Giovanni Solima, with L'Invenzione del Nero from Caravaggio, his album tribute to the life and works of the great Italian painter Caravaggio. It's on the Sonsogno imprint from the Italian record label Egea, E-G-E-A, but you can also find it online. We'd, of course, like to thank Riccardo Muti for being so generous with his time. We invite you to tune in next week for the second part of this conversation, recorded on January 29 at Orchestra Hall by our good colleague Eric Arunas. We'd like to thank Celeste Rabluski and Emily Master for helping make this interview possible. Matt DeStefano put the program together with me and made it sound great. Thanks to our funder, Alphawood Foundation, and other friends of this program. Drop us a line. Let us know what you thought about this or any of our other programs. Rentap, that's Patner spelled backwards, R-E-N-T-A-P, at AOL.com, or visit the WFMT Facebook page. WFMT.com/critical thinking is where you can find this or any of our other programs on the always free Critical Thinking podcast. I'm Andrew Patner. We'll see you with part 2 next week.